Greetings. Greetings once again. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. It's good to have everyone here with us, and I want to start out with a shocking, almost tragic story. Tragedy was averted, thankfully. A 26-year-old man was arrested after taking a woman's four parakeets hostage. He took the parakeets hostage. The suspect contacted the woman via a mobile communication app and attempted to pressure her into meeting him. Warning, there was no way to save her parakeets unless she agreed. Here's what he said in the mobile communication app. You have four lives that will die. If you apologize, I'll forgive your parakeets. Well, the woman, she didn't meet him. She contacted authorities who arrested the man. The man has admitted to the charges, but for some reason, he's still called the alleged suspect. All four parakeets are now safe. So just a lesson for all you young ladies out there, especially if you have parakeets. This is why a woman needs either a husband or a father, so that you're not threatened by kook, weirdo, creepy guys who might take your parakeets hostage. So the story only caught my eye because my daughter has a number of parakeets. So this struck quite close to home. Now, if this guy took my daughter's parakeets hostage, well, first of all, he'd have to have quite a setup to accommodate all the parakeets if he actually wanted to hold them hostage for any period of time. He'd have to have an aviary of his own. But also, my daughter wouldn't call the authorities. She would tell Dad, and then this guy would meet Dad. And then that would be interesting for him. So anyway, the parakeets are all safe. Did you get that? So just you can come off the edge of your seat there. Meanwhile, we go to the widespread delusion file where experts have convened at the Heritage Foundation. They did this last week to celebrate 1 year of MAHA. That's right. And they all focused and discussed and had focus groups and discussions, breakout groups, workshops, on what the Trump administration and Bobby Kennedy Jr. could do over the next 3 years to make America healthy again, or to keep making America healthier again-er. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Was happy to share the accomplishments of the MAHA movement. It's a movement, that's right, 1 year into his tenure. And he said he could summarize the whole thing with three words. Three words. Eat real food. Those are the three words. He says that the primary culprits for poor health in America, he couldn't have actually said this. I mean, he's been to college. The primary culprits is ultra-processed foods. That's grammatically incorrect. I'm sure that's a mistake on behalf of the DailySignal.com. Bobby Kennedy Jr. probably said the primary culprits are ultra-processed foods, at which point I just said, really? Is that the primary culprit for, what did they say here? Poor health and premature death in America. The primary culprits, says Bobby, are ultra-processed foods. And he didn't mention that the number one killer in America is actually selfishness via the practice of abortion. Kills more Americans by way far than anything else. And Bobby Kennedy is, he's a pro-abort. But he didn't take that issue on at all. Instead, he said 70% of the foods that our kids eat are ultra-processed foods, and it's killing them. Is that why, since processing and preservatives in foods have come along in the past 100, 150 years, is that why lifespans have increased so much, Bobby? I mean, if you don't count the abortions, because if you count the abortions, then the lifespan is significantly decreased. And it doesn't have anything to do with ultra-processed foods. It has to do with selfishness and self-aggrandizing politicians getting themselves elected on flim-flam quackery around ultra-processed foods while advocating poison pills to restrict and cut off the next generation, or to actually chemically poison and kill little children before they ever have a chance to eat a single Cheeto. Kennedy went on to talk about how the MAHA movement is not only focused on physical health, but on mental health. He says we're poisoning ourselves. We're mass poisoning ourselves. The result is not only physical illness, but mental illness, Kennedy argued. And then we have a quote here from the president of Tony Lyons, the president of MAHA Action, which is an NGO. That's an alleged charity that works to raise awareness, I suppose, of the MAHA agenda. Tony says drinking sodas is why mental illnesses have disproportionately affected American youth. It's not the fact that roughly a third of their generation has been killed by their own parents who've abandoned God and all godliness. It's not any of that. It's those soda pops, oh wait, and donuts, sugary cereals. It's not the culture of selfishness and murder into which they've been born, and godlessness. They'll have nothing to do with anything to do with discussing anything having to do with any of that. Mac Rosenberg, I have no idea who he is, but he was there. He said, we should have the healthiest babies, the healthiest children. We need to figure out what's wrong and fix it. Well, I would start with the killing of all the children, which isn't hard to figure out. And probably more difficult to stop because the hearts of the people are just so grossly ungodly and sad. But the MAHA movement rolls on. Without any sense of irony, pretending to be looking out for infants and children, Robert F. Kennedy announced last week a new $100 million program aimed at homelessness and addiction. A new government program, $100 million. This is from the Everything Left is Right Now file. Yeah. Remember when we used to mock the leftists for their stupidly named programs? Their programs that seem to have been named in the Soviet Politburo that were supposed to mitigate poverty and depression and all of that? Well, now the alleged conservatism of MAHA institutes $100 million Soviet-esque programs. And they end up with headlines in the Epoch Times talking about how great they are. Everything left is right now. Yes, RFK Jr. plans to spend the $100 million funding outreach to homeless people and drug users. Well, because that's never been tried before. Nobody's ever spent millions and millions and millions upon billions of dollars for outreach. What does that mean, to fund outreach? Can you even define that? This is how the money gets stolen by the Somalis. We're funding outreach for autistic immigrant children. And before you know it, $350 million has flown in suitcases to Somalia, and Boko Haram's got the money. Is it Boko Haram in Somalia? I forget which one it is over there, but Let's see here. But more from RFK Jr. and his new $100 million program. He says, well, he announced it on Prevention Day, which is a day that nobody ever heard of that's sponsored by the government. It's dedicated to preventing drug abuse. So the reason no one's ever heard about it, it hasn't been all that successful as of late. So its popularity has waned. He says, he said on Prevention Day, he says healthcare systems under the previous Democrat administration, that healthcare system under those Democrats was designed to cycle people between sidewalks, emergency room visits, jails, mental hospitals, and shelters. That's how the Democrat healthcare system, you know, because there was no healthcare system before Joe Biden came along and started cycling. You don't need any kind of system to cycle homeless people, homeless drug addicts, to cycle them from sidewalks to emergency rooms to jails to mental hospitals and shelters. They do that on their own. Well, not on their own. Somebody has to pick them up and all that. But certainly don't need another $100 million. But oh no, he says we're not going to do that. That's what the $100 million is for. Oh, I get it now. It's a genius idea. Listen to what this arrogant, pompous, godless heathen, baby-killing sex pervert, RFK Jr., the darling of the conservative right, although there is no conservative right anymore. Everything left is right now. Here's what he says about his government program. No one took responsibility for the whole person under those dirty Democrats. So now the government under RFK and the Republicans, they're going to take responsibility for the whole person. And I'm thinking, I don't think I want the government to do that. I think the person should take responsibility for the whole person. And then maybe their family. But no, Bobby's got $100 million that he's willing to wager that the government can do it just fine. Bobby Kennedy, we will remind you, is a graduate of the 12-step program, or maybe several of them. And he credits 12-stepping getting him off heroin, which he used to snort off toilet seats. Or wait, that was cocaine. How come it says he was a heroin addict here? But he just said he used to snort cocaine off the toilet seats. And so, well, I guess when you're an addict, any toilet seat will do and any powdery substance will do. So it's a sad lifestyle. I wonder if what programs. Well, he went to a 12-step program. He says now his $100 million, well, it's not his $100 million, although he has $100 million that he could have done this with. He's going to use some of my money and yours instead of his own to pilot initiatives. That's a lot like funding outreach. I think that means sticking large amounts of cash in suitcases and flying it back to your family. Anyway, what are the initiatives all about? He's going to fund fund pilot initiatives. Three words there. That gets you some extra suitcases. He's going to fund pilot initiatives. One of them is known as the, get this, okay? You can't make this up. Safety through recovery, engagement, and evidence-based treatment and supports. Also known as STREETS. That's the acronym, STREETS. STREETS. Safety through recovery, engagement, and evidence-based treatment supports. Put this to the Politburo for a vote. Anyway, it's the same age-old liberal solution that they exercise so effectively in Minnesota and elsewhere, as I hopefully will find out, now being operated by the very tip-top of the MAHA movement. It's a movement. It's not just a government bureaucracy. It's a movement, by golly. And the movement says law enforcement, first responders, courts, housing providers, and healthcare systems will work as one team so people will no longer fall through the cracks, says Bobby Kennedy Jr. as he demands $100 million from you and I to pretend he's a Soviet Politburo member who cares about all the people and all of that. I mean, that's the thing about the Soviets is they cared to they pretended so much to love and care about the people they didn't kill. Now, some people they killed, kind of like Kennedy. There's some people he's okay with killing, but the ones he doesn't kill, he needs your money to pretend he cares about them. View, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. Yeah, it's the same thing every time, whether it's the Soviet Union or the 6th, 11th, or 14th AC/DC record. It's the same old song and dance over and over again. Does anyone remember that Bobby Kennedy was a leftist, Democrat, communist scum? Yeah, so he's right on a few issues of health. He's wrong on a bunch of them, too. And he's wrong on the biggest, most important issues of all. And so he'll get no quarter here. The only person who can have mercy on Bobby Kennedy is God himself. In fact, now, speaking of politics, let's go from Bobby Kennedy, appropriately enough, to the Straight to Hell file, where we check in with a House committee hearing that took place this past week regarding Homeland Security, where committee members heard testimony from DHS officials, one of whom's name, wait a second, this is not his name. Let's see. I got the people confused because I don't really care that much about any of them. One guy is named Lyons. He's with the Department of Homeland Security, and I didn't write down his first name. Let's assume it's Dan. And we're just going to call him Dan Lyons because you don't know who he is either. But he's way up there in the Department of Homeland Security. He's up, let's see, do I have anything on him? Maybe I wrote his name down somewhere else. I looked the guy up, I didn't get his first name, if you can believe that. All right. They were having a hearing, as you can well imagine, there in the House of Representatives because of the recent fatal shootings of Renee Good and Alex Pretty in Minnesota back in January. And a congresswoman named LaMonica MacGyver said, quote, "We are here because people are dying," unquote. That's why she said she wasn't, nobody was there grandstanding or politicking or anything like that. She was there because, she wasn't there because she's a member of Congress and otherwise she would just be laying around twiddling her thumbs, looking at her belly button. No, she was there because people are dying. And of course, if that were the case, then she would never get to leave that hearing or any hearing. If they actually had hearings because people were dying, she would never leave. And I'm talking about people dying at the direct, under the direct responsibility of the federal government. She'd never be able to leave. Just admit it, LaMonica. You're here because of politics. Can't you admit that you're there because of politics? And we all know because you're a politician. We know you're there because of politics. What is the deal with politicians? They're the last people to admit that what they're doing is politics. They know it's always because they care so much. That's why they're called politicians. Jews. They never participate in politics. They never politicize anything. They just care and care and emote and care more. And LaMonica MacGyver cared so much that she attended the hearing. And she asked Mr. Lyons of DHS, she asked him if he, she said, "Do you consider yourself a religious man, Mr. Lyons?" Which he looked quizzically, not really sure how to respond. And before he could, she said, quote, "How do you think Judgment Day will work for you with so much blood on your hands?" Unquote. At which point MacGyver squirmed a little in his, he's not MacGyver, she's MacGyver. I tell you what, I haven't been getting enough sleep. That's okay. So you'll have to forgive me. I get them confused because it's all just politics. I mean, it could be a three-ring circus and they're just clowns exchanging masks. So I get them confused once in a while. But it was LaMonica MacGyver who accused the DHS official of having blood on his hands. Well, when he was asked about that, Mr. Lyons said, "I'm not going to entertain that question." To which MacGyver responded, "Of course not. Do you think you're going to hell, Mr. Lyons?" Huh? Unquote. So she asked this guy in public, in a congressional hearing, if he thinks he's going to hell. And of course, MacGyver is the quintessential East Coast communist liberal. Literally forged and produced by the George Soros political factory. There's no way she believes in anything like God. There's no way she knows anything. The only thing she knows about the Bible is that it talks about hell. She was probably made aware of that just before the hearing so that she could spring this little gotcha on Mr. MacGyver. My goodness. Anyway, and Mr. Lyons, even though he's a MAGA guy, which that's supposed to mean he's a conservative, it's a Christian, he probably has a cross tattooed somewhere on his body. But he was apparently completely unprepared to comment on Judgment Day or the afterlife or anything like that. He basically just refused to answer. And so this is an object lesson for anyone who ever has the opportunity to speak in public, especially before the Congress. Never be caught like that. Always be ready when someone asks you if you think you're going to hell. That's like one of the greatest opportunities you could ever have. In Congress, in front of God and everybody, with it going on the congressional record, going out on C-SPAN, covered by CNN, and even Breitbart picked it up. So had Mr. Lyons been prepared, it could have been a great moment for preaching the gospel.
Wait, he's not Christian.
Right? Well, he's MAGA.
Yeah.
He probably has a cross tattooed somewhere on his body. No. So, well, even if he is going to hell, if he could have explained why he's going to hell, that could have helped someone else avoid it. Anyway, but he refused. He just refused to answer. And I'm telling you, people, when it comes to questions like this, do you think you're going to hell? You're not allowed to refuse to answer. If you refuse to answer that question, you're a coward or you're just a vacuous, empty suit. And I looked the guy up and he's a lifelong law enforcement government bureaucrat. I think he was in the military. That's probably where he got the cross tattooed on him. So that made him acceptable for the MAHA crowd. MAHA? No, I said MAGA. I'm sorry. Anyway, you should always be ready with the gospel. Mr. Lyons' mother must be so ashamed of him. He had the opportunity to preach the gospel in public and he blew it. And so the whole committee hearing can just be crumpled up and just gone straight to hell. The whole thing. It's just of no value whatsoever. They argued back and forth about meaningless drivel. after dropping the issue of heaven and hell like a hot potato. All right. Now, from there, we go to, some more politics. We have a MAGA character, Carrie Prejean Baller. She was ousted from the White House religious panel. Did you know they had one of those? He asked his extremely attractive audio engineer. Did you know the White House has a religious panel? Yeah, and it's not like one of the new panels with all the gilt gold and all of that. This is people who meet for, we'll get to that. Well, Carrie Prejean Baller was on the, a panel. She was on the panel appointed by Donald Trump. Now, you may remember Carrie Prejean Baller. She was the 2009 Miss California USA winner. She gained attention back in 2009 for speaking out against legalizing gay marriage from the stage of the Miss USA pageant. She actually said that it shouldn't be made legal, and I remember all that. Now, at the time, back in 2009, Trump owned Miss Prejean. Trump owned the Miss Universe organization at that time, and he defended Prejean's comments, saying that it's quite possible we might want to consider not legalizing gay marriage back in 2009. Based on a previous ownership and relationship, Trump established his Religious Liberty Commission and appointed Mrs. Prejean Baller now. But he established the Religious Liberty Commission to provide fake Christian NGOs with talking points for their endless fundraising campaigns and to help him get into heaven. Oh, wait, those were my notes. I'm sorry. The article says that he established the Religious Liberty Commission to uphold laws that protect all citizens' full participation in a pluralistic democracy and protect the free exercise of religion. It's interesting that you establish a Religious Liberty Commission, and in the description, the very last word is religion. Just color me skeptical of all of it. Not that I'm a big fan of religion, but I mean, if you're going to have a panel about religion, religion should be in like the first three words, I would think. But no. Anyway, the Politburo obviously churned that title of the panel back and forth a bit before they finally came to. There's way too many words in all of that. Anyway, well, now this commission, this panel, they held a hearing last Monday at the Museum of the Bible in Washington. Why at the Museum of the Bible? Because that's what a phony political organization would do to bamboozle all the MAGA Christians out there. Did you hear about it, Fanny? They met at the Museum of the Bible. Those darn Democrats would never do that. So that's just evidence that the folks running the Museum of the Bible will just let any old kind of rabble come in there. A bunch of phony, baloney, religious, bloviating politicians get together to congratulate one another, slap each other on the back, and write out massive budgets to engage and raise awareness. And what are the other things they do? They pilot initiatives and they fund outreach. They're doing all of that right there at the Museum of the Bible, and they're doing it for religion. So, you know, well, here's the controversy. At the Museum of the Bible, Prejean, who converted to Catholicism from evangelical Christianity last year, right there in front of the whole panel and everybody at the Museum of the Bible, she invoked her Catholic faith in wearing a Palestinian flag pin and rejecting Zionism. And so everyone went ballistic and they ejected her. She's been officially disappeared from the religious liberty panel. She's out. And now you folks know that I'm no fan of the Palestinian flag or the pins or any of that stuff. As for Zionism, I think there's as much of a case against Zionism as there is against any other country on the planet. As far as their past sins and their current devious machinations, I think you could be upset about Zionism about as much as you could be upset about any other people who've established any other government on the planet for the last 5,000 years. So if you have a problem with Zionism, okay, that's fine. But we have a comment here. Now, so Prejean, by the way, I have to comment on this. She converted from one fake phony Christianity, small c Christianity, the evangelical type, over to a larger, bigger fake phony Christian religion, Catholicism, indicating that she's just as vacuous and empty-headed as we all thought she was back when she attempted to make a case against legalizing gay marriage there at the Miss California USA, Miss USA pageant, I guess. There are very few people dumber than beauty pageant contestants. I mean, that goes without saying. But we may have found someone. Right here, he's the president and CEO of the 40 Days for Life pro-life company. His name is Sean Carnival Barker Carney. And he said that her claim that Catholics are against Jews is absurd, unquote. At which most people, they were just like, yeah, that's absurd. But then anyone who knows anything about history said, well, that's not really that absurd. Anyway, listen to what this guy says. This division of Catholics against Jews is a recent fad. It's an online invention. For centuries, Catholics have understood that. Okay, so I got to stop right there. So it's a modern internet-based error and fad. It's an invention. He doesn't know anything about 1933, not to mention the Inquisitions and the pogroms. Are we all supposed to have forgotten all that? Oh, that's right. Most people have forgotten all that. Well, I haven't forgotten all that. But I think Sean Carnival Barker Carney, just like most of the people reading what he wrote or said and listening to what he said, they don't remember any of that. And then listen to what this guy goes on to say. He says, Catholics have understood that Jesus Christ is the fulfillment of the Davidic kingdom and that our faith comes from the Jews. The church is the fulfillment of the promises of the old covenant, unquote. And of course, 99.959% of all people listening have no idea what any of that means. And neither does he, because what he just said is the basis upon which the Catholics have always been killing the Jews. I was wondering if he was ever going to do anything except the thump, thump, thump. I mean, that's quite the bass line, I must say. But anyway, so nobody really knows or remembers or has been educated about replacement theology and the fact that the Catholic Church believes it replaced Judaism. And they've used that rationale to murder tens, hundreds of thousands, possibly millions of Jews over the past 2,000 years. But this is all just a recent fad. It's an online invention. You know what's an online invention? 40 Days for Life. Bunch of Catholics going out rubbing their beads in front of abortion clinics. All right. And sending out lots of fundraising letters and electing Republicans. Okay, so there's, oh, and is there anything more to say about Carrie Prejean? Okay, so she was right. In 2009, when she said it was a mistake to legalize gay marriage. Wow, that's really impressive. That just confirms that you don't have to be all that bright to be in the Miss USA pageant there. It's because she didn't point out that it's criminal for a government official to promote the idea that they have anything to do with defining marriage. That's a criminal thing. Whoever started that in the government, they should have been arrested by someone else in the government, but everyone has forgotten all of that, just like they've forgotten the fact that the Vatican signed a treaty with the Nazis and then the pogroms and all that. But hey, history's not that big of a deal. It's not like we're doomed to repeat it if we forget about it or anything like that. Okay, now, let's go to more serious news and not happy or funny or anything like that. this is from the Death by Spirituality file. You may have heard that actor James Van Der Beek died this past week of colorectal cancer. He just announced he had it a year or less than 2 years ago, and he died. And guy had 6 kids and a wife, so that's to his credit. I'm not familiar with any of his work, but I'm not familiar with any actor's work for like the last 25 years, so nothing on him. It's just that I really don't pay attention to any of that stuff anymore, and haven't for quite some time. But apparently he was a talented actor, and he had a wife and 6 kids. So, but here's what he had to say about dying of cancer. Now, here's a fella who knew he was going to die soon. Or, well, I guess none of us can know. But he had a pretty good idea that he was going to die very soon. And he gave an interview to a network news show. And here's what he said to the interviewer. Before cancer, God was something I tried to fit into my life as much as possible. After cancer, I feel like a connection to God, whatever that is. It's kind of the whole point of this exercise on this planet. And then he goes on. What am I? I meditated and the answer came through. I am worthy of God's love simply because I exist. Wow. And if I'm worthy of God's love, shouldn't I also be worthy of my own? And the same is true for you, wow, he said. Right before he met the judge of all the earth. He went on to say that this revelation, he said, quote, came to me due in no small part to all the prayers and love directed toward me. And now you're waiting there. There's a pregnant pause and you're thinking he's going to say the love directed from Jesus, from God, No, he's talking about his fans and the people posting up on Facebook about his struggle with cancer. Anyway, he meditated and an answer came through. Okay, you know what? If you sit and meditate, an answer will come through. You should open a Bible. If you find out you're going to die soon, which, by the way, everyone here listening is going to die soon, just in case you didn't know that. I know you don't think it's very soon, but in hindsight, trust me, it will seem like it was very soon. So anyway, you should open a Bible and don't count on your own meditation. And don't think that you're worthy of God's love simply because you exist as a sinner, which Mr. Van Der Beek at least never publicly acknowledged. And so I worry for the destiny of his eternal soul. And it doesn't matter how much everybody says he was a great guy and wonderful, and it doesn't matter that he was faithful to his wife and he was a good father to his 6 kids. That doesn't matter as much as the fact that he was a sinner and he needed to be saved from his sins. And you don't need to be saved from your sins because God's so mad about your particular sins that he has to send you to hell. That's not it. It's unfortunately, sinners can't live where God is forever. And there's just no alternative except to live elsewhere. In fact, you can't live without him. So you'll just exist elsewhere and it'll be relatively miserable. God calls it hell and you don't want to go there. And if you don't want to go there, you need forgiveness for your sins because only the justified, only the righteous can live with God. And since you can't do it yourself, you better find somebody who can. And I'm here to tell you, it's Jesus Christ. He said he could, he would. All you have to do is believe. And nobody told James Vanderbeek, apparently. I hope someone told him privately. Because it doesn't look good for him at this point. So I'm reminded of the cartoonist who died a few weeks back. Who just... Anyway, it's just so sad. It underscores the importance of taking the opportunity with every person with which you have a reasonable opportunity to preach the gospel. And you can do it in very simple ways. You don't have to grab a Bible and smack them in the head and go on and give a sermon. There's simple, easy, quick ways. If you need help with that, click the button on my website that says The Gospel That Saves Today. It'll give you, I don't know, 5 sentences. It's not that complicated. All right. Meanwhile, we go to the family detonation file where, let's see, there's a guy running for governor up in Minnesota. His name is Jeff Johnson. He's been running a campaign for governor up there. He, in his campaign, emphasized that he was tough on crime, tough on immigration, and tough on all that fraud that's been being uncovered there in Minnesota among those dirty Democrats. And Jeff was on about doing that, running for governor, when his daughter, Hallie Marie, was discovered dead with multiple stab wounds inside her locked apartment in St. Cloud. Her husband, Dylan, was found with what cops believed were self-inflicted stab wounds as well, but he didn't die. Cops are calling it, at first cops called it a botched murder-suicide, but since the husband's been charged with second-degree murder. And Jeff Johnson, the politician, has suspended his campaign in the state that's become a battleground of ICE operations and clashes between protesters and federal officers in recent months, and everyone wonders who's the murderer, who's the protester, who's guilty, who's not. And Jeff Johnson woke up this Sunday morning past to the stark reality that none of that stuff really matters all that much. In fact, all the things that he was talking the most about and focusing the most on, the things that he cared most about, he found out none of them were actually the most important things after all. At least I hope that's what he realized. I don't know. Maybe after the funeral, he'll screw his MAGA hat back on and he'll want to make Minnesota great again and go up against those dirty Democrats. I don't know. So in researching this story, which is a horrible story, 22 years old, that's my kid's age. In researching the story, I went and read comments and posts, social media posts, regarded to the aftermath of this horrible, awful crime. And I read posts from the family, from friends, from the Minnesota Republican Party, even from Democrats in Minnesota, even from Tim Walz. The Democrat, the dirty Democrat that Jeff Johnson was running against. I read comments from all of those people. and they were all utterly godless. And so if a 23-year-old new husband can butcher his 22-year-old wife in cold blood, shocking the entire state, and nobody mentions God, not even the family, man, we got problems. I mean, if this won't get your attention, people, what the hell is it going to take with you? It's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for sticking with us even through that tragically horrible, awful picture of America today. You know what's astonishing and eye-opening is that the killing of the leftist agitators by the vulgar police gets way more press than the young couple butchered and the murder. And it's just, our priorities are definitely out of order. All right. Now, speaking of out of order, we go to the damnation file and check in with Bill Maher, who is ensconced high atop the damnation file. And he did an interview with a comedian this past week, and the comedian and he were talking about the COVID jab vaccine mandates that occurred back in 2021. And the comedian said to Bill Maher, quote, imagine Bill, if you had to conform, unquote. To which Bill Maher replied, quote, I did have to conform. I didn't want the vaccine, but I had to have it. I couldn't have continued my life. They wouldn't have let me do the show. I had to do it. I had to do it right here in studio. I did it in this room, unquote. Bill Maher said to the comedian on his show. I don't know whose show it was. I don't know if it's his show or the comedian's. So Bill Maher has confessed to bending the knee and giving in to getting the vaccine to keep what he calls my life. He said, I couldn't have continued my life. Wow. That really says something about the state of Bill's soul. They wouldn't have let him continue to do the show. The show is his life. So Bill Maher has confused his show with his life to the point where he's willing to inject something he has no idea what it is or what it'll do into his body to keep his life, to keep his show. He then went on in the interview to take a direct jab at Fauci over the COVID mandates, the vaccine mandates. And the thing is, Bill Maher, he should be examining himself, not Fauci. I mean, to have admitted this in public and not have had that be a major revelation and have the scales fall from your eyes, Bill, is, well, again, it's instructive of the state of Bill Maher's black, dark little soul. I met Bill Maher face to face, and he was creepy. He was a creepy, creepy guy. His contempt for me when we met personally was palpable. He mispronounced my name and the name of my show. And I don't know if he did that just on purpose, just out of disrespect, like my dad used to do. My dad used to mispronounce the names of any of my friends he didn't like, he would mispronounce their names. Any of the local people in our neighborhood that my dad didn't like, he would mispronounce their name. probably like subconsciously. I don't even know if he knew he was doing it, but he was doing it out of disrespect and derision. And Bill did the same thing to me. And I don't know, it might have been derision. It might have been that he just didn't care enough about me to even spend any time researching who I was. Little did he know, little did Bill Maher know at the time that I was the closest he ever came to eternal life so far. That's it. That was his closest shot, and he blew it. Hopefully we'll get to meet again someday. Even Bill Maher could be saved from the eternal damnation he so richly deserves. So Bill Maher, the fact that Bill Maher is allowed to live and breathe another day is a testimony to the long-suffering and grace of Almighty God. Okay, so there, we'll go from there to, do I want to do this? This story might get me in trouble. HGTV has ended they've ended the show called Rehab Addict. Have you seen this show, Rehab Addict? Well, it's over. HGTV has ended it because the host overdosed. No. No, I'm making that up. Okay. Although I saw this show briefly when it first started, and I thought to myself, well, I know why they call it Rehab Addict. Because the host looks like in between scenes she's in the back room anyway. But she did not overdose. She uttered an offensive racial comment. That's right. Let's see. During the filming, she blurted out the word nigger. Yes, she did. Now, they call it the N-word here in the article, but I'm just going to go ahead. If you're driving, I apologize. Pull yourself out of the ditch. That's right. I just said the word because that's what the whole story is about. Is that she said that word, and now her career is over. Here's what she had to say, and I didn't watch the video, but it said that she just blurted it out in the midst of a conversation. But here's what she had to say. I want to be clear. So when someone starts with that, I want to be clear, you can bet that they wish things were way more muddy than they are. What that means is things are already real clear. But she says, I want to be clear. The word in question is wrong, and it's not part of my vocabulary and never has been, unquote. At which point everybody said, well, why did you blurt it out there in the middle of a sentence if it was never a part of your, was your mind hijacked by AI and reprogrammed and stuck that word into your vocabulary? Anyway. So she's apologizing over and over and over, and she says she wants to now focus on her career, which that'll be a relatively short deal there. Won't have to focus on that very long, except she may have to focus on changing careers. She says she's focusing on her career, her relationships, and her community. She also says, in addition to, I'm sorry, and I apologize, and I want to be clear, she says she is deeply saddened by the hurt her words have caused. Words? It was one word. There was only one word. That was the problem word. It was the N-word. That's right. You said the word nigger during filming right there in the middle of your sentence there, and that was the problem. Now, listen to what HGTV has to say. They say, they called up Variety magazine to give a statement. Not only is language like this hurtful and disappointing to our viewers, partners, and employees. This is the guy with the demon tattooed on his neck. The guy who looks like he's about to overdose. That faggot with the demon on his neck. I don't know his name, but. He's the poster boy for HGTV, Homo and Gay TV, in my book. disappointing to our viewers, partners, and employees. It does not align with the values of HGTV. Accordingly, we have removed the series from all HGTV platforms. We remain dedicated to fostering a culture of respect and inclusion across our content and our workplace. HGTV, one of the singular promoters of ungodly sexual perversion on the planet, is upset that their redneck rehab addict uttered the word nigger on the air, and so they're going to fire her. And well, she can go back to remodeling houses. Just keep your mouth shut, sweetheart. That's what I would recommend. Just keep your mouth shut. Okay, don't be. All right. Meanwhile, speaking of a slip of the tongue, the Royal Mounted Police there in Canada, Royal Canadian Mounted Police, have had to go on the air because of the unfortunate mass murder at the public school up in Canada. You've all heard about the mass killing. Maybe you have, maybe you haven't. It made the news, kind of. The shootings took place at Tumbler Ridge Secondary School and also at a residence. That's a nice way to say the kid killed his family first, then went to the school and shot up the school. Killed 9 other people, wounded 25, some of whom are hanging on to life, and they're scarred and they're maimed for life, some of it's just awful. But the deputy commissioner up there, Dwayne, up there in Canada, he says, he was asked, why are they referring to the transgendered freak maniac murderer as a girl when it's a boy? And why are you calling her it, she, they, them, and all of that? And the deputy commissioner said, we identify the suspect as they chose to be identified in public and social media, eh? They? Is that what you said? So I apologize. This man is not associated with the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. I don't mean to. I probably have some mounted police call me up and be very upset. I apologize. I just assume that every policeman in Canada is, but it's not. They're like the Texas Rangers. They're probably still some straight men in the mounted police, whereas the commissioner here, Dwayne, he's dismounted, and he calls the murderer they because they chose to be identified in public and social media. The story that I pulled down from Breitbart goes on to say that the suspect, who is deceased, they say, he is deceased. Is that right? That's because he killed himself. But Breitbart doesn't say that because they're trained urinalists. But they do say that the suspect was born a male and identified as a female, both socially and publicly. Uh-huh. Okay. But I wonder about at his autopsy. I wonder how he identified there. I'm guessing he identified as male. I'm just guessing. And then what about all the people that he killed? How did they identify at their autopsies? For all of you people who are thinking that even tolerating such deranged, maniacal behavior as trying to rebel against your physical sex, and to say that you identify socially and publicly, that's giving credit as if that can be done by even saying that that's what he was doing. It shouldn't even be spoken what this maniac was. Oh, no, here's how I got the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. The Royal Canadian Mounted Police district commander described the alleged shooter as a gun person, rather than as a gunman, so as not to offend the dead killer, which is kind of odd that that's really going out of your way to prevent any offense when you're trying not to offend a dead guy who's not only a mass murderer, a psychopath, and a maniac, but he killed himself. But you don't know offense, eh? 9 people killed, approximately 25 others were injured, says Breitbart. Actually, they were wounded, because when you're shot, it's the guy who wrote this article obviously never been shot, never seen anybody shot, because you're wounded. Anyway, folks, sex perverts are inherently unstable people. And that goes from the guy committing adultery, that goes from the fornicator and the guy committing adultery, all the way to the transgendered freak maniac. They're all mentally unstable, because sexual immorality is a crime against your own body, your own mind, and your own soul. It says so in the Bible. It's very injurious, and it causes massive mental instability. And trannies are just the more extreme mentally unstable people on the mentally unstable spectrum of perverts. And for the police here, and the journalists entertaining their perversion, even after explodes in mass murder, that in and of itself is perverted. You're now perverts for entertaining and promoting the delusion of this maniac. All right. So speaking of delusion, we go to the Strong Delusion file, check in with the EU Parliament, where they voted to recognize men as women. Uh-huh. In fact, they say they voted to recognize men as women as part of their women's rights agenda. So in order to promote women's rights, they're going to recognize men as women. This is from the Strong Delusion file. Did I already say that? That's right. This official stance of the EU Parliament is meant to give men access to female-only shelters for domestic abuse, rehab, and refugee service. Everything these people do is in the context of Soviet-style socialist, criminally insane governance. Everything they do. Like, this insanity of recognizing men as women is so that they can put men into their shelters that they run. They're a bunch of communist perverts. Now, the measure was not binding. The folks at Not the Bee published without a hint of irony. Not binding. But it lays the groundwork for the policy to be presented at UN headquarters in New York next month, with the hope of the EU Parliament being that it will be adopted as an international standard across international agencies and partner NGOs. Wow. Okay, and the folks at the Bee are upset because if it succeeds, a bunch of dudes will get access to the most vulnerable women in spaces specifically designed to protect those women from men. And while there is some truth to that, the whole idea of the government having shelters for domestic abuse, rehab, and refugee services, that is perverted and corrupt. The government has taken the place of the family and the church, and you wake up and before you know it, they're calling men women and women men, and trannies are shooting up their schools, and they're still going out of their way not to offend one another over it all. Well, we're offended. We're highly offended. All right. Meanwhile, over at Lifeway, that's the Southern Baptist Convention, they published the so-called Christian Standard Bible, which is not a standard in any way. Well, they conducted a survey, the Lifeway Research State of Discipleship. By the way, discipleship is a word that does not occur in any of Paul's epistles, and it doesn't have anything to do with the modern mission of the modern Christian believer. It's not about discipleship, which that tells you that the Southern Baptists at Lifeway are doctrinal illiterates, and they're the ones running the surveys. They say Bible reading rates have gone up from 16% to 19% in some demographic or something. I have no idea. I'm not going to go through all these numbers. But you got a bunch of Southern Baptists here who want to encourage us that Bible reading rates have gone up. Why? Because they want to sell Bibles. They have their, you know, back in 2017, they pushed out their Christian Standard Bible as an alternative to the massively successful NIV. And it basically fell on its face because the ESV came out and won the day. And Lifeway, they market and sell so-called Sunday school curriculum, so-called Bible, vacation Bible school propaganda. Anyway. And they run surveys and they publish Bibles that are copyrighted. And what's funny is they make fun of people who read the King James Bible because we call it the authorized version. And then they call theirs the Christian Standard. And then you make fun of us. Some of us actually know what's in the Bible. And we're not running surveys. We're preaching the gospel. But they're preeminent merchandisers of religion dressed up in Christian themes. And don't buy anything they say. And don't buy any of their books. Don't buy any of their bogus, phony Bibles. That's it for the Weekly Worldview. We'll be back next time. Until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.